Slavery is back.
Welcome to a place where private business profit from a captive labour force, yet pennies are spent on medical services to a population in which the Indigenous, the poor and the mentally ill are overrepresented. Where isolation, humiliation and degradation are facts of life. Welcome to prison.
It depends who's telling the story, I suppose. The prisoners would have one view, the people who work in the prison system would have another, and I think it's up to people to decide where the truth is.
Give government propaganda and the media spin doctors the flick. And check out Doin' Time for news, views and tunes on prison issues from Guantanamo Bay to Christmas Island to prisons and detention centres everywhere. Every Monday at 4 p.m. on your community radio 3CR.
We are still fired up and we're still talking about revolution.
Hello and welcome to the Doin' Time Show. This is 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on the dial, streaming live on www.3cr.org.au. And a warning that this episode of Doin' Time contains audio images of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who have died and graphic discussion of deaths in custody. First, we will be joined by Victorian Senator Lydia Thorpe, who will talk about the truth-telling work of the Uruk Justice Commission, which she honours. We will yarn about the media release entitled It's Genocide. More about this shortly. After that, we will bring you an interview and conversation with Associate Legal Director Laura John from the Human Rights Law Centre and her client Leela, and they will discuss asylum seeker policies brought out by the Albanese government and Kevin Rudd as well. And there's quite a lot of violation of human rights going on there. But first up, we'll talk about the media release entitled It's Genocide. Thorpe honours the truth-telling work of the Uruk Justice Commission and welcomes its historic findings. She says it's time for a national response, including truth and treaty and compensation for the substantiated findings of crimes against humanity. And I've had the pleasure of interviewing Lydia many times over the years, although we've had a very long break and she's First Nations, and I am going to ask her to talk about what land she's on when she comes on. So Uruk delivers on historic mandate through final reports calling for recommendations to be implemented in full and truth-telling to continue. Hello, Lydia. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Marissa. Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you. Now, Lydia, this is a show that has very sensitive Aboriginal content, very different to mainstream media outlets, which pits people against each other. We're here to talk about the truth. Would you be able to just talk about the media release entitled Genocide and give us your... Basically, I'm handing it over to you.
Thank you, sister, and thank you for the work that you do as part of truth-telling, telling it how it is and telling it for what it is. Incarcerating our people has been, you know, ongoing for over 200 years. It's an approach of the coloniser to maintain harm against my people. It's a strategy to, eradicate us, basically, lock us up, take our kids away, and do nothing about it, even though we have royal commissions, we have reports after reports, coroners coming up with recommendations, yet, no one has ever been held accountable for any death in custody today. Now, I think, in terms of the Uruk report, it's told us something that we've known for a very long time, and that is that it's genocide. It was genocide. It still is genocide because the assault on our people has not ended. And the statistics prove that continued assault, the crimes against humanity that continue each day in my people's lives. So I do welcome the Uruk report, and I do congratulate those people involved in its delivery and who were part of the truth-telling that informed such a report. But, you know, on reflection, we still see the same government that welcomed it violating our rights. We see, you know, federal politicians, Labor politicians, walking as part of the truth walk for justice, yet they still violate their own people's rights because, you know, there's black senators, Labor senators, there's Jed Carney, all walking, wearing their, you know, gammon red, black and yellow. Yet when they get in that chamber, when they get in that parliament, they do the absolute opposite for our rights. They deny us our rights. They take away our rights, and they continue to be complicit in this ongoing war against my people. So if we don't see action from the Uruk Commission's work, then, you know, it'll be like the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, which is 34 years old, and the majority of those recommendations still not implemented. So we will see no improvement, and we won't see any end to these ongoing crimes against humanity. So, yeah, that's where I sit with that. And obviously we do need more truth-telling. We need it to happen at the federal level, but it's got to follow action. You know, they're all words and no action, this Labor government. And there's a lot of compensation obviously owed as a result of land theft, of desecration of country and water, and the decimation of our families through incarceration and child removal and suicide and so on. So, yeah, we'll see what happened for those, particularly those who walked their gammon walk, and see if they'll put some action behind their walk.
So the Europe Justice Commission is based in Victoria only. So genocide has not just occurred in Victoria, evidently.
No, genocide continues to happen all over this country and has happened all over this country. We have massacre sites all over this country. We have family clan groups all over this country that can tell their own stories of what happened to their people and how their people were rounded up and slaughtered by the colonisers. And I've heard those stories when I've travelled around, and it's, you know, it still affects us today.
Absolutely, and the Doing Time show does a lot of anniversaries of massacres. That's actually one of the things that we concentrate on the most here.
Yes, well, you know, thank you for doing that, because we can never forget what's happened and what continues to happen. We need that to be told to the general population, and the general population need to get on board. You know, those that say that they support us, those yes voters out there. You know, it's not a once in a, you know, 50-year opportunity to stand up and vote for us. You need to stand with us every single day and make sure that this assault stops and that we are able to have some kind of freedom on our own land and self-determine our own destiny.
Yeah, look, I have a lot of respect for the commissioners. The show did a lot of extensive coverage, and I do honour it. But I think you're right, Sister. I think that there needs to be an honour roll. There needs to be an honour roll calling out all the names of the dead.
Yeah, well, you know, the Dawn Service certainly names the massacres in this so-called state of Victoria. And we know what a solemn event that is down the road from the Shrine of Remembrance. You know, it's okay to remember some people, but people don't want to acknowledge the first war that ever happened on these shores, and that's the war against my people and the death toll that occurred during the frontier wars. And we do need to name that, and we do need to acknowledge that, but we also need to stop it.
Correct. Absolutely correct. And also, it's the federal government's responsibility, isn't it, to uphold international human rights obligations, including the prevention and punishment of the crime of genocide. Can you talk about that?
Well, sadly, the federal government pick and choose which international instrument they would like to abide by, and we're seeing that particularly with genocide. They're complicit in the genocide that's going on in Palestine, and they have a Attorney General's fiat, which is a way to protect themselves from being held accountable for genocidal actions or crimes against humanity, and that is that the Attorney General can make decisions on whether those crimes can be heard in any courts in this country. And you see through Uncle Robbie Thorpe's work trying to get genocide heard in these courts, it can't happen because of this Attorney General's fiat, which only the Attorney General decides, and it's never happened. And other colonial countries that invaded their first peoples have the same Attorney General's fiat to protect themselves. So they're all in cahoots with one another to protect themselves from ever being held accountable for genocide. And when I was in Geneva recently, I had some truths to tell of my own about how this country is complicit in ongoing genocide in this country. And the experts that I'd spoken to were quite shocked to hear what is still going on here. So, you know, we've got to think about who we're sending to the UN as well and how much truth-telling is really going on, because good old Oz seems to be getting away with a lot of those crimes, and the international experts are getting a very different story. And that's more the reason why we need truth-telling. You know, we need to support blackfellas to get to the UN, like activist blackfellas, not ones that are being sent by organisations or governments. We need the activists to get to the UN, and, you know, I'll continue to raise funds and build capacity of activists here to represent us at the highest level.
That's fantastic, and it's really important work. Why do you think the government is scared of what consequences it could bring to acknowledge genocide?
Well, I think they're scared of going broke, sis. You know, we could take them to the cleaners and send the whole country bankrupt, but we're not going to do that. We're also quite conciliatory people, and, you know, a conversation about acknowledging the genocide and working towards treaty and what that looks like for each family clan around this country, not a corporatised model like we've seen in Victoria. It has to have family clans represented to self-determine their own destinies, not the corporations for them. And that would... It would basically bring us to a point where we can negotiate what peace looks like for us. And the government don't need to be scared, but I think what it comes down to is money and being liable for over 200 years of murder and theft.
Indeed. Can you talk about the bill that you brought to the Senate last year?
Well, I brought a couple of bills, but it was obviously the Attorney General's fiat.
Sorry, that's right. Also the,
yep. And there's also the red lines package, which will be reintroduced. So it's actually being updated as we speak. And that is to stop this country from being complicit in genocide. So stopping the arms trade that's going on and arming those, particularly Israel, stopping that kind of trade and being complicit in these crimes against humanity, having a commissioner that ensures that this country is not aiding and abetting in a genocide, and having some an accountability measure so that if there are politicians that are voting or supporting crimes against humanity, that they can be personally liable. There needs to be some consequence for these people that are simply allowing this genocide to continue.
Yeah, I mean, it all goes back to stolen wages and also how, you know, women that were having babies were left to die.
Well, that's still happening.
Of course.
We have women being chained, handcuffed, giving birth in today's society. Now, that is abhorrent, and my heart goes to those women and those babies. We talk about deaths in custody, but they're not counting stillborns, they're not counting miscarriages, and we know that so many of our women particularly have lost babies because of the mistreatment or the violence that they endure in this so-called, you know, justice system.
Absolutely. And in fact, there's a very powerful quote here in the media release: the formal recognition of genocide and our rights to treaty as independent nation to nation is powerful.
Absolutely. And that's what it needs to be. It's got to be through independent nations. It cannot be through the state. And, you know, Victoria is being put up as the model. Well, it's not. They don't have it right. They still don't have all of the nations around the table. There's a lot of family clans that are left out, and it's the haves and have not. There is this, you know, upper class black society that's come about as a result of this process, and this was never meant to be this way. If we're not addressing what's going on in our communities at the absolute grassroots level, then they need, you know, people need to check themselves, and they need to also look at how close to government they are, because that's, you know, that's the problem here that I'm seeing and many others are seeing, that the upper class blacks are are cozying up with the government, and, you know, there's no justice at the grassroots level. Our people are still suffering every day, and this is all whilst the treaty's being negotiated.
Exactly.
They're talking about school zones. They're not talking about stopping the, you know, silicon being mined in the Mitchell River on my country. They're allowing that to happen. They're allowing the logging to continue in a most sophisticated way, where they're calling it, you know, they're greenwashing it and blackwashing it and blackcladding it and selling off Crown land. And we've got to be good little blackfellas and sit back and negotiate a treaty that doesn't bring justice.
And all of that needs to be changed. And as a senator, I think for me, I have been wanting to really put right a lot of the appalling interviews that I feel that you have had at the hands of the mainstream media. I have found it absolutely appalling, and I have sent text message after text messages and getting no response from these media outlets where you have been treated abominably. So for me, I am honoured to have you on the show to really talk about the real stuff. You know, don't just talk, we can't just skim the surface here. And one of the things that is really important here is the implementation of the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And that's been a core focus of your work, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. And the Labor Party voted that down, including the blackfellas in the Labor Party voted down their own rights, including Dodson himself, the father of reconciliation, voted down the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. I mean, governments are not our friends. They're not doing us any favours. They continue this sophisticated genocide. And it even includes our own people, unfortunately, and it's quite demoralising to see blackfellas voting down their own rights. But they've got to toe the line of their party, regardless of selling out to their own people. So I'll continue to fight for that. I mean, that, you know, the UNDRIP is minimal. It's minimum requirements. There's even a section in UNDRIP that says they can have all these rights, but as long as they don't have too much kind of thing. There is still a clause in the UNDRIP at the, you know, United Nations level that still protects the coloniser, but we can't even get that through because we can't get it through with the Labor Party, which has got a few blackfellas there. And, you know, I've put it to the chamber a number of times, keeps getting voted down. So we just have to do it regardless of it being enacted in any policy or any legislation. We just have to live it. We have to live our sovereignty. We have to be our clans, and we have to protect our country. We can't rely on politicians and governments.
That's right. And yet recommendation 8 in the Europe Justice final report did talk about an audit of existing legislation's compatibility, didn't it?
Yes.
That needs to be upheld.
Yes. Well, there's 100 recommendations, and the government has said that, you know, they might implement a couple of those recommendations out of the 100. So I can guarantee you that they won't be implementing any recommendations that actually gives us justice or changes our lives in any meaningful way. They, you know, continue to lock our women up at alarming rates in Victoria. So Jacinta Allen is not genuine when she comes out and holds hands with her Aboriginal friends She's just playing the game and biding time. And when it comes to the election, she'll be racing to the bottom on justice and locking more of our people up. So she can look at the legislation that currently stands, and we saw that with, you know, how she backflips on drunk in a public place. And other legislation that was meant to have been changed because of deaths in custody. So I have no faith, basically, in this government or any government. We've got to demand justice. We've got to get out. Got to get back out on the street, and we've got to change it that way.
Absolutely. But anyway, I'm glad that the final report went through. You know, and there's been a number of recommendations calling for the full transfer of decision-making power to, yeah, what a joke. I mean, sorry, but it hasn't happened yet, has it? Self-determination, all policies and programs that affect Aboriginal people.
It would be nice.
It would be nice.
Control our own lives.
But, look, Lydia, thank you so much for coming onto the program. I'm wondering if you could just tell us what land you're on in case new listeners have just tuned in.
Sure, I'm on Wurundjeri country, the unceded lands and waters. And if you're not paying the rent out there and you live or work on Wurundjeri land and you benefit from Wurundjeri land, then I suggest you look at paying the rent for being on unceded stolen land.
And also, what land are you from?
I'm Gunai, Gunichmara and Japarung. Beautiful country, southeast and western parts of Victoria. And, yeah, we're fighting to protect our country. As I said, they're mining the Mitchell River for silicon, which is going to be so devastating to our waterways. And I've just found out we've got PFAS in the Gippsland Lakes, which is also quite devastating, which I'm chairing a PFAS inquiry on the side, Senate inquiry, and we're looking at where PFAS is contaminating our waters and our land across the country.
Thank you so much for coming onto the program, Lydia, and keep up the good work.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, sis.
Stay deadly.
Have a good one. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Senator Lydia Thorpe speaking about genocide and about the Uruk Justice Commission and truth-telling. And as I said, this show has very sensitive Aboriginal content, and we look at building the movement to stop Aboriginal deaths in custody. And I'm just happy that I was able to set the record straight and really interview Lydia on the real issues.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
Comrades, friends, siblings all over this continent, I urge every one of you to join us in Canberra. I refuse to be silent while Gaza was being annihilated. History will judge us all. No one will be able to say they didn't know, that they didn't see, that they didn't hear. The screams and pain are reaching every one of us from the screens we hold in our hands. Now is the time to act. July 20. I urge, I beg each and every one of you, each person of good conscience, to stand with us in Canberra. Together we can send this simple, clear message. The Albanese government must sanction Israel now. When governments fail, responsibility falls upon the citizenry to act. If we don't stand up now, then when? Join us in Canberra, July 20. It's time for the Albanese government to sanction Israel.
People tasted freedom. comes when those hellish skies turn to blue and starry nights. As our voices start to rise, we're ending an apartheid.
And in case you've just tuned in, this is the Doin' Time Show. It's approximately 4:30. And next up on the show, we will be speaking with Laura John, who's the Associate Legal Director from the Human Rights Law Centre, and also we will be speaking with Leela, who, as I said in my intro, she fled the country with her mother and ended up being detained in Nauru. And basically, Leela is going to... is not, that's not her real name, as she, as her identity needs to be protected. The Albanese government must end 12 years of cruelty. The Human Rights Law Centre is calling on the Albanese government to end 12 years of mandatory offshore detention inflicted on people who came to Australia seeking safety. It marks 12 years since former Prime Minister Kevin Rudd announced no person seeking asylum by sea would be allowed to settle in Australia. Since the announcement, thousands of people have been forcibly sent to detention camps in Nauru and Papua New Guinea, suffering violent attacks, medical neglect, and widespread discrimination. We will be speaking about these violations of human rights and more with Laura and Leela. Hello, both of you. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. It's good to be here.
You too, Laura. And
I appreciate your time.
Great to have you. Now, can you just give me the pronunciation of the name? Leela?
Leela,
that's it. All good. Thank you, Leela.
Yep.
So, Laura, did you want to start off, and Leela, feel free to interrupt if you need to. I want you both to feel comfortable on air. This is actually a show that airs very sensitive material. It's a Doing Time show, and it looks at prisons and detention centres, and it's a safe environment for everybody to voice things so that people are not deprived of a voice. Okay.
Thanks, Marissa, and we appreciate your time.
That's lovely. So, Laura, did you just want to start off talking about what's going on?
Sure. So over the weekend, we hit a very dark milestone, as you said, 12 years of mandatory offshore detention that's been inflicted on people like Leela and her mother who came to Australia just seeking safety. This policy of offshore detention has tragically caused the deaths of 14 people. And immeasurable harm to the over 4,000 people who were transferred to Papua New Guinea in Nauru. Each of those people's stories matter, and each of those people deserve justice. But this is also about all of us as Australians. It's about what we accept is done in our name by our government. And so on this 12th anniversary, we and many others are calling on the Albanese government to put an end to offshore detention once and for all. UN bodies, human rights organisations, even the government's own commissioned inquiries over the past decade have reported on the widespread neglect and abuse of people who are warehoused offshore. And yet, despite this, the policy continues to exist today. We've got over 100 people trapped in Nauru and 37 people who were abandoned by the Australian government in Papua New Guinea. And that cruelty is really entrenched by successive governments, but it doesn't need to be that way. It's really important to note also that the cruelty that people have experienced offshore has continued for people like Leela and her mother who were evacuated to Australia and who are now stuck in this permanent limbo with no permanent resettlement options for them. So this is a policy that has caused considerable harm. Those harms echo through families and workplaces and communities, and it's time for it to come to an end.
Absolutely. And earlier this year, the Albanese government attempted to use its new deportation powers to permanently exile three refugees living in Australia to Nauru for the rest of their lives. Is that right?
That's right. And so instead of ending this harmful policy of offshore processing, the Albanese government is attempting to dangerously expand those powers by its new deportation laws that it attempted to use earlier this year to, as you say, send three refugees to Nauru. Now, all of those refugees are fighting their deportations and none have been transferred to Nauru at this stage. But separately to that, we still got this continuing policy of offshore detention for people who come to Australia by boat to seek protection. And there are still 100 people trapped in Nauru as we speak under that policy. And that's the policy that Layla was subject to.
And how do you feel about that, Layla?
My name is Layla. I came to Australia in July 2013, seeking safety and protection. Back then, I was my early 30s, but I still felt incredibly lost and afraid, like a child. Along that seeking safety, that I'm approaching my late 30s, then I've been spent over a decade in limbo, and I'm worried that my change to become a mother may be lost forever. These were the best years of my life, years when I could have lit family and also contribute to Australia, but I've been left waiting.
Yes, it's a really dreadful, cruel violation of human rights and basically anti-migrant laws. What would you like to happen for you?
What's happening to us was not just crazy. It violates human rights. The government create two groups. Those who arrived before September 18, 2013. And those after the government,
That's okay.
The promised government protection to those who arrived before that day. I arrived in July 2013, but I was sent to Nauru, and that changed everything because of this. Yeah. It was excluded from getting a permanent visa, even enough I clearly meet to the critical. This policy has no consistency. It's unjust and disgusting.
Yeah. And Australia is your home, and you have a right to belong and to be treated fairly.
Yes.
Permanent residency is a right, not a favour.
The Albanese government must be in this injustice. Everyone who was sent to Nauru or Papua New Guinea should be allowed to stay permanently. We are not just the numbers. We were people, family, mothers, daughters, parents. As Prime Minister Albanese state himself, he wasn't to bring kindness and the fairies back into the Australia policy. We are asking for that kindness now. A few months ago, and if you remember, American tourists pick up the baby wombat from its mother for just a few seconds. The Prime Minister personality addresses the nation at the say the stress case the mother's wombat was unacceptable.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
That's tourists what's deport. I love living in the country that value composition like that. But now, sorry. But how can we just in this so deep consent for a
You're okay. Only do what you feel comfortable with, and Laura will help you explain, won't you, Laura?
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Right. And I think...
Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and I think Leila makes a really good point here that these policies are based on arbitrary datelines. They're not based on fairness or justice or equality or any of the other things that the Albanese government would have us believe they stand for.
Yeah.
It is based on a random date that the government chose many years ago and that it has remained stuck with. Even though, as Leila has pointed out, we're talking about 900 people who are in Australia who have suffered through offshore processing, who have survived offshore detention and who have built homes in Australia. They have families, some of their family members are Australian citizens. They have jobs, they contribute to our communities. These are people who are our neighbours and they are Australian in every sense of the way, other than that formality of a permanent visa. So we're saying that now is the time for the Albanese government to live those values that he so proudly told us about on election night and to grant people like Leila and her mother and everyone else who's been subjected to offshore detention permanent resettlement and safety in Australia.
So, okay, so just with Leila at the moment, is she... sorry, Leila, I just want to clarify something here. Is she on a visa?
So Leila has been on precarious temporary bridging visas.
Terrible.
She must renew every 6 months for quite a number of years. That's right, isn't it, Leila?
You there, Leila?
Yes, I'm here.
That's right. So, so basically then that's limbo, isn't it, and trauma?
Yes, it is.
And
I think what makes this so what makes this policy so cruel is that the minister could turn around tomorrow and give Leila the opportunity to apply for a permanent visa. The minister already has that power in our existing migration laws. The minister already has multiple requests that Leila and her family have made directly to the minister, seeking permission for Leila to be allowed to apply for a permanent visa or to be granted a permanent visa. So this is really about political will. It's not about needing to change the laws. The power is there for the minister already to do this and to provide that certainty to Leila and her family.
Absolutely, absolutely. So really what we're looking at here is that nothing's been done.
That's exactly right. It's 12 years of nothing being done to remedy this cruelty and 12 years of that protracted cruelty continuing.
So, okay, you've got people stuck on Nauru, they're suffering, and then all the government can give them is these appalling temporary visas. Well, they probably won't be able to work anyway.
Well, luckily for Leila, she is able to have work rights. But as you can imagine, and I'm sure, Leila, you can speak to this, it's very difficult to get ongoing work when you've got to renew your visa every 6 months.
Exactly. It's true, isn't it, Leila?
Yes, it is.
Are there any other comments that either of you wanted to make?
Leila, do you want to go first?
No, you go first, Laura.
What we really want to say to all of your viewers, Marissa, is that this is a policy that has affected, you know, a relatively small group of people. It's caused incredible harm, but it's so much more than that because this is about policies that our Australian government, who we elect, continues to enforce. And so we'd really encourage everyone to speak to your local member of parliament, let them know that this cannot continue to be done in your name, that you don't accept this, and that we want to see people like Leila, who are our colleagues, our neighbours and our friends, we want to see them granted that permanent residency, and we want to see that happen in this term of government.
And are there any resources in the Human Rights Law Centre, the website of the Human Rights Law Centre that people can read or access?
Yes, we'd encourage everyone to hop onto our website. You can Google us, Human Rights Law Centre, and we actually have a timeline that sets out the last 12 years of cruelty with offshore detention, all of the significant milestones that we have reached as a country, and those aren't milestones that we should be proud of. And we have some information as well about the policies and what can be done to rectify this.
And Leila, did you want to say anything? You don't have to.
I want to say we'll ignore it. 13 years of stress, trauma and pain endured by a real human mother and daughter who came here for safety.
Exactly. And in fact, just before we finish, I just wanted to draw attention, I hope this is okay, Leila, to another woman, Fatima, a mother who survived detention in Nauru with her young family, because I know there was a quote there as well.
Yes, that's right, Marissa. And Fatima, her youngest son, he actually turned 10 earlier this year, and upon turning 10, he automatically became an Australian citizen. So we have this completely outrageous situation where Fatima and her family are on these temporary 6-month bridging visas like Leila is, but her youngest son is an Australian citizen. Clearly something must be done. The minister has the power to do this. All family members should be given that same right to permanency and Australian citizenship. And we want that for Fatima's family, we want that for Leila's family, and we want that for every family who's been subjected to this offshore regime.
And that's why I wanted to actually talk about that, because it's all interconnected. You know, they're all experiencing the same thing, and you, both of you, are very beautiful, strong women. Keep up the good work. And Leila, I wanted to really honour your courage in coming onto the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Laura, are there any concluding comments that you wanted to make?
Well, I think Leila says it best when she says that she wasn't safe in her home country, she wasn't safe in Nauru, and she just wants the chance to live in safety with her family in Australia. And I sincerely hope that that's something that we're able to give her.
I mean, Nauru's a horrible place. How would the politicians like to stay there?
Nauru is it's really not a safe place for refugees, but particularly for refugee women.
I can just imagine the dreadful abuse and trauma that people, particularly women, would have there.
That's
beggars
right.
Belief. It's approximately 4:48, and you're listening to an interview with Leila and also from Laura John from the Human Rights Law Centre. It's been lovely to have the two of you.
Thank you so much.
And hopefully when you two come back on the show, we're going to have good news.
We hope so. Thanks for your support.
Hopefully. Thank you.
Take care, both of you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And that was Laura John, Associate Director from the Human Rights Law Centre. And she came onto the show with her client, Leila. And Leila has a name, which is not her name, to protect her identity.
Did you know that Western Sahara is Africa's last colony? The issue of Western Sahara was raised in the Eddie Mabo case referencing Terra Nullius. Western Sahara is illegally occupied by Morocco. Indigenous Sahrawis are denied their right to self-determination. France continues to veto United Nations human rights observation in Western Sahara. Sahrawi people are being killed by Israeli drones. Like to learn more? Become informed. Become an Australia Western Sahara Association member at awsa.org.au. Australian Western Sahara Association is a 3CR supporter.
The Victorian state government is planning repressive new laws to restrict protest, including bans on protective masks and lock-on devices, increased police search powers, restrictions on symbols of resistance such as flags, and creation of so-called safe zones around religious buildings, putting significant areas of the CBD off limits. We must say no to this attack on democracy. Protest is a fundamental human right. Join the fight to defend it at a mass rally hosted by Defend Dissent Coalition on Tuesday, 12th of August, 5:30 p.m. at Parliament House. Defend Dissent Coalition is a 3CR supporter.
And you're back with the Do In Time show, and I hope that lots of people can actually rock up to that protest. Really important. I also think about also the people that are on the Canberra Convergence at the moment. And it's approximately 4:50, and I wanted to give a little bit of good news, and that is that the Do In Time show made its target. So thank you very much to each and every one of you who has donated. And because I was away last week, and I wanted to actually read out the donations again, the people that donated in full again, just to honour all the listeners for donating. So I'll go from the top. Juliet, thank you very much, $50. Brett Collins, $52. Istra, $30. David Glantz, $67. Ramina, $20. Pillar, $50. Karina, $10. Andy, $25. Nita, $30. Marion, $100. And Joseph, $10. Stephanie, $50. Josephine, $52. Robert, $100. Susan, $52. Claus and Cheryl, $60. Joseph, $100. Rosie, $50. Bruce, $10. Catherine, $67. Anoka, $10. And Pitt Street Community, $111. I think that's nearly everybody. There's a bit more. No, I think that's it. So thank you very much, everybody. I feel like I'm back in Radiothon again. I keep thinking, oh no, I haven't hit my target. That's right. Look, thank you very much for donating all your beautiful donations to the Do In Time show and all shows at 3CR. And the Do In Time show has, as you know, has done a lot of work in regards to women in prison and all sorts of things, including sensitive Aboriginal content and also sensitive content in regards to asylum seekers and refugees. And as you heard today, we had some very, very emotional interviews today in regards to the Uruk Commission. Thank you, Lydia, for coming onto the show. And also we spoke with Laura and Layla as well, in regards to the what's been happening with visas and violations of human rights on Nauru. So I'll play a couple more announcements and then we'll end the show.
Comrades, friends, siblings all over this continent, I urge every one of you to join us in Canberra. I refuse to be silent while Gaza is being annihilated. History will judge us all. No one will be able to say they didn't know, that they didn't see, that they didn't hear. The screams and pain are reaching every one of us from the screens we hold in our hands. Now is the time to act. July 20. I urge, I beg each and every one of you, each person of good conscience, to stand with us in Canberra. Together we can send this simple, clear message. the Albanese government must sanction Israel now. When governments fail, responsibility falls upon the citizenry to act. If we don't stand up now, then when? Join us in Canberra, July 20. It's time for the Albanese government to sanction Israel.
People tasted freedom, soon those hellish skies turn to blue and starry nights as our voices start to rise. We're ending an apartheid.
Have you heard about the news that's come out of the NT?
What news? Fires, floods, chicken flu, what?
No, the payouts.
Payouts?
Compensation for what you went through.
No.
Well, I reckon you should go for it. You deserve every cent and more. I'll back you. You know it.
Oh, sis, you're the best.
Yes, I am. If you are Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander and were removed from family or community in the Northern Territory before 1 July 1978 or in the ACT or Jervis Bay before 11th of May 1989, you may be eligible for the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. If you know of a family member who was removed but passed away after the scheme was announced on the 5th of August 2001, you may be eligible to apply for redress for them. Call Link Up Victoria, VACA, on 037 002 3700 and leave a message for a callback or contact the Territory Stolen Generations Redress Scheme on 1800 566
111. A 3CR supporter.
And we're nearing the end of our show. And stay tuned every Monday, 4 to 5, for the Doin' Time Show. And it's goodbye from Marissa. And we're now going to be going out now with our theme song, Black Fella, White Fella, from the Rumpy Band. Bye. Stay safe.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.